Okay, so today with me on the Sobre Mesa podcast, I have Jean Lopez, who is from Contra de Duelbo, which is a think tank without money. Did I say all of that right?
Close enough. Contra de Duelbo. Yeah.
So what does your think tank do? Or your think tank without money do? Your group?
Right. So we got together a few years ago. I think it was like 2017, something like that. And we felt that climate change was a really, really important issue, but was not really part of, you know, the topics that the social movements or political parties even usually discuss. So we felt we could have a small role in trying to change that. And that's basically what we do. So we try to approach it from, you know, like a left-wing, radical, quote-unquote, perspective. And that's what mostly what we have been doing so far. We, you know, try to help with organizing demonstrations or, you know, social encounters. We gave a seminar a couple of years ago, so things like that.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because it wasn't really a big, I mean, it's 10 years this year, isn't it, since 15M, the big sort of social explosion in Spain. And right. But climate change wasn't really part of it, right?
No, and even like I said, like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, it wasn't. It's changed a lot now. Now it really is. Uh-huh. But when we started, it really wasn't. So these years have been really transformative. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine, Jesus. The first question, is Spain, well, I don't know if you can really say it, good or bad country when it comes to combating ecological disaster? And where does it rank? So where would you place Spain in all of the huge Greta Thunberg themed ecological disaster, climate change, that, like you say, has blown up in the last couple of years? How would you describe to a foreigner where Spain fits in all this?
Right. So the second question first, my feeling is that Spain is like in the top, you know, 25% of countries in terms of emissions per capita. Uh-huh. So I think it's around, you know, 30 something, depending on how you count. So it's not like the top emitters, which are like the super imperialist countries usually, and these tiny, you know, oil kingdoms with crazy, you know, lifestyles. So it's not up there, but it's definitely in the like rich club in the emissions per capita ranking. So there's that. It's definitely, you know, part of the problem more than part of, you know, the solution. And then in terms of how it's doing to combat it, that's a tricky question. I would say nobody's really doing great in terms of states. So yeah, there's that. When the right wing was in power, I would say we were even worse than the average, because they really went out of their way to, you know, prevent like solar power being a thing in Spain and things like that, which is really insane. The current government, maybe it's a bit above the average. I don't know. It's definitely not doing what we should be doing to prevent, you know, the worst effects of climate change. But they are doing some things that are good, I think. Like, this is being recorded like, you know, late 2021, when there's like a big energy crisis going on. And the Spanish government was like the first one going to Europe asking for the energy market to be completely changed. And they were saying basically that, you know, the way it works now is not really compatible with any green transition or anything like that. So they are doing things that are okay and even a bit, you know, forward-looking. I don't know if this is a fair description of what Spain is doing, you know, in this whole thing, but I don't know. Yeah.
No, I think it sounds reasonable. I mean, going back to what you said about when, I think it was Rajoy's government, right? The last popular, Partido Popular president, prime minister, however you want to translate it. They, you said specifically they were anti-solar. There was some legislation, right? That, what did they do to stop solar being like, because it's mental, right? To think that Spain, this country with God knows how much sunshine, right, doesn't so invest supposedly in solar.
Yeah, we could be like the, you know, worldwide, like number one solar power if we really wanted to right now. I think we are not. And I think the main thing they did was they basically prevented people from installing solar power energy by themselves, because they charged people a lot of money if they wanted to do that. So basically nobody did it. There were no, you know, economic incentives to do it. They also didn't obviously push the big energy companies to do anything like that. So it was just a complete disaster. And it, you know, put us a few years behind everybody else in Europe, even countries which are like thousands of kilometers more to the north than we are. So it's insane. Yeah, I mean,
there's huge amounts of land and there's huge amounts of sun, but it's behind everybody else, which is really strange, really.
Yeah.
But I mean, when it comes to sort of catching up, are they the new like European funds or the Krona bonds, as they were called? I can't remember what it's called now. The European New Deal or something like that.
Like Next Generation.
And a lot of, I think like a third of the money is allocated for a green transition. And a lot of from what I've read, a lot of the money is going to like the big corporations. Is that right?
That's right.
What's your opinion? What are they planning to do, and what's your opinion on it?
So my opinion on the whole thing is that it's better than some of the alternatives that were about to happen. Like, I think it's better that they do this kind of, you know, mutualization of debt and trying to invest public money into the economy. So that's much better than what the EU used to do. Only a few years ago. And, you know, even during the Corona crisis, it seemed like they were just about to repeat the same mistakes. But that being said, I think the way the money is being spent is not really going to change anything important. So that's my feeling. Like, they're just giving the money to big corporations and, you know, big, so in this case, energy companies, and they are supposedly going to, you know, invest it in greening the economy, but I don't think they are doing anything that is going to be very significant. So that's how I feel.
And
they are always relying anyway, you know, the private capital investing in the right things. So I think that's, in general, in Europe, this is the key thing to consider, that, you know, their whole thing is that the public institutions will invest some money, but really the bulk of it has to come from private capital, and we have to create the right incentives for private capital to transition the economy to something we want. That kind of, you know, that kind of rhetoric, and you know, it's not happening, and nobody really changes anything to make it happen. So that's
kind of greenwashing the problem, right?
Yeah, to some extent it really is. Yeah,
and what things are Spain's, what problems would you say were, I mean, obviously it's a problem for all of us, but what are the problems that are Spain specific, and what is being done, or what should be done, or what is not being done about them?
Problems related to climate change or problems in general. So I think for Spain, so what people hear the most about, I guess, is extreme weather, and especially, you know, heat waves. So that's definitely going to be a very big issue. But I think that the biggest problem probably is like desertification. So I don't know if that's the right word for it, but basically like half of the country is at risk of becoming basically a desert in a few decades. There's going to be probably a lot of issues with water in general. So lack of, you know, constant supply of water or adequate, you know, supply of water, it will put at risk like food sufficiency, especially in a country like Spain, which in the last years and decades is increasing, you know, the amount of food it grows through irrigation, not only for internal consumption, but also for export. So like 90% of the water used in Spain is just used for that, you know, and And then, so it's basically, that's the issue. Everything else is noise compared to that. And then, you know, the public campaigns you see on TV is like, you know, close your, the faucet when you're brushing your teeth. And it's like, okay, I mean, that's for sure it's great if you do that, but it's like that's nothing compared with the water that, you know, it's been used by agricultural interest in, you know, to grow food for exportation and things like that. So I think that's a main issue. I don't know if you remember a few years ago, I think 2 or 3 years ago in South Africa, there was like a massive drought and people couldn't shower for weeks or months. And, you know, so I think things like that could happen in Spain very easily. And it's like we're high risk. I think we are the country with it's most at risk in inside Europe.
Really?
Yeah. So it I think that's the main risk. And what else? I don't know. Fires, of course. So, you know, this has been always a big issue in Spain. It will only get worse. And especially the way forests are managed here, basically, because they are, you know, planting trees which very easily catch fire and I don't know. And I guess even beyond that, so people are talking about tropical diseases coming through, you know, mosquitoes and things like that, because their habitats will expand from Africa up to the south of Europe. So things like malaria or things, you know, diseases like that, which are not really common here, will maybe become common. Yeah, so
it's, there was that one last year, right? In Sevilla, there was one.
It's starting to happen, and I guess it will become increasingly common. Yeah,
and that was quite dead. I mean, I don't know if listeners remember this, but last year there was, I think I don't know how many people it killed, but it was putting people in comas, right? I think causing sort of encephalitis.
Like the sleep, disease, right?
And that was brought over by mosquitoes. That was, well, yeah, I remember being quite scared of that and lathering myself in cerebellum. That's very interesting. And heat waves as well. I mean, it's been, from what my wife has told me, it's always been a huge issue here, and I suppose it's just going to get worse, right? I mean, with people's health and heat waves.
Yeah. So it's on the one hand, we are learning, you know, to cope with it. So there was a massive heat wave in Europe, like in the early 2000s, and there were tons of deaths because people were not that used to it. Now, you know, like AC systems are more widely available and people know how to, you know, take care of themselves a bit better. Obviously, the people who have resources to do so, but I think in general, most people are able to, you know, resist better heat waves. So when one comes, you don't see like thousands of people dying, which is what happened, you know, in France and countries like that. But yeah, it will get worse, it will become hotter, and especially there will be just more heat waves. Like, you know, they will last longer, they will be more frequent, and, you know, temperatures will rise. But also, like, you know, since the whole weather system is becoming fucked up, you will also get like more, you know, like these Filomena events, like, you know, the polar vortex going completely nuts and, you know, getting like 1 meter of snow in Madrid and things like that. So it's like both. The weather will just become more extreme in general.
Yeah, I mean, Filomena was an experience and a half here, right?
Right, yeah. So it's supposedly to happen, like, you know, whatever, once every 200 years. And, you know, I bet we will see one like that again. Not that, you know, far into the future.
Yeah, I have no doubt. And we probably won't have any spades or tractors or anything.
Right.
For people that can't remember, Filomena was a huge storm in Spain. When was it? February this year?
Yeah, or January, right? Yeah.
January.
And yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Basically, the whole of Madrid came to a halt for nearly 2 weeks, right? It was definitely
nearly
2 weeks, yeah.
There was no, like, food shortages. You couldn't get bread. People couldn't get to work. Schools were closed. It was insane.
And it was like a foot of snow as well, or more maybe. And like, the only shop that I went to for 2 weeks was my local fruit shop. And he wrote on the door, and like, Lewis won't abandon you. Because he opened the shop every day. But half the other shops were shut. Like, big supermarkets and everything. It was crazy. So what is the history of the ecology movement in Spain? Because I always forget his name. The guy with a beard, he's deputy for Podemos, Unidas Podemos, who's recently launched
a party inside Podemos. It's yeah. Juan López Duralde, right?
That's right. And he was the leader of the Greenpeace.
Greenpeace, yeah.
But that's about my only knowledge.
Okay. I don't know that much of the history, but like I've been working inside, I guess, that, you know, whole ecosystem of organizations and people for a while. So I would say there's basically two types of thing. One is the usual NGO. So Greenpeace is the usual NGO, WWF, Friends of Earth, groups like that. Of course, they are the ones with most money, the most, you know, visibility, mainstream visibility, the most affiliates or whatever, like people paying dues.
Yeah,
which is really the only thing that, you know, they do. Like if you belong to an NGO, you basically pay some money and receive some information. And then there's like, you know, the more like social movement, environmental groups. I think that the largest one and the most important one is called Ecologistas en Acción, which I guess you could translate like environmentalists in motion. I don't know, something like that. And it's like a huge federation of smaller groups all over the country. So actually all this I mentioned and like one another, which I don't recall who they are, anyway, so they call themselves like the Big Five, actually, and they have like meetings with the government and big companies and things like that to try to lobby for common positions. So they are the most like important groups in Spain. And I think it's basically dominated by either of those kinds of organization. I think NGOs have their own issues and limitations and, you know, flaws, which I suppose it's well known. My opinion is that the traditional environmental, you know, organization in Spain also has its own kinds of, you know, issues, limitations. You know. For instance, this is like my personal opinion, obviously, but I think they have like a strong, you know, affinity for, let's say, local action, you know, sort of anarchist oriented politics, in the sense of not really liking, you know, big structural organizations or changes or things like that. It's also very oriented to like denunciation of issues. So, you know, making these things wrong, these people are doing this thing wrong. They try to solve them usually through litigation, which is, I think, great, to be honest, because they are the only ones doing that. And sometimes they succeed. So they are able to stop really shitty things through, you know, the courts.
Mm-hmm. That's cool, yeah.
But you know, that's really the main thing they do. And I think it's a very valuable activity, but it's probably not enough. So it's not up to the challenges that we have right now, I think. So, you know, they have to be part of the solution, but it's not enough. So I think political ecology or environmentalism these days needs to be much bigger than that, and, you know, more diverse and part of the, you know, like I said, part of the culture of the political parties and all sorts of organizations. Yeah.
And that's a part of one of my other questions was, I mean, come 2009, as you said earlier on, ecology gets sort of put on the political map. And I can't remember who had exactly what, but, you know, Green New Deal, that was a big thing for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Jeremy Corbyn, Bernie Sanders, was also, each sort of party had their own version here, right? Well, we can talk a bit about Vox later, but the PSOE and Unidas Podemos and Mas País as well had their own sort of version. Yeah. What was your take around this time before and afterwards as well on sort of ecology arriving to the Spanish political scene?
Right. So, this is a big question. I think it's true that this happens with a lot of, like, you know, my feeling is that a lot of political developments happen first in the English speaking countries, and then the other countries just kind of adopt that and, you know, maybe change it a bit. Sometimes they don't change it at all, which causes strange, you know, effects, because some things really don't apply here, like, you know, they apply in the US or the UK or wherever. But I think this is one clear example, like, you know, they were like the vanguard in this kind of idea and everyone else just adopted it. So I think this has its problems, but it's how the world works. So it's what we have and we have to deal with it. Then it's true that all, you know, center left or left parties had something like that. I think PSOE amazingly called it explicitly Green New Deal. Like, if you go to their program, they literally had Green New Deal, which is funny because what they proposed was probably, you know, the further it was not close at all with, you know, to what the Green New Deal is supposed to be, but they used the name as is. And then, you know, the others had something which was probably closer to it, but they didn't use the name, I think. I don't know. Anyway, so my feeling, my take on this is that, you know, Green New Deal is not like like a very specific program that you just take or leave. It's sort of like a battlefield, you know, of symbolic battlefield. So if you want to participate in it, you can try to define it in the way that you want, and people are going to attack it or, you know, or defend it or take parts of it or not. Some people criticize Green New Deal precisely because it's just so, you know, ambiguous and vague that can mean very different things for very different people. But I think that's really what happens when something is a bit successful, like people start to adopt it and change it and, you know, try to use it in their own context. So for me, that's not a flaw. It's just like, you know, you won a bit and now it became popular and people are using it and it's just starting to mean very different things. So I think that's just life. And, you know, you have to, you know, get on with it and try to make it useful. I guess the question is, does it make any sense to call it Green New Deal in Spain, where people probably have no idea what New Deal refers to or means, or, you know, because I guess in the US, people have this idea that New Deal means like, you know, I don't know, like public investment, sort of democratic turn in politics, a sense of, you know, emergency, like, you know, everything is wrong and we need to do something about it. So you say New Deal, I guess many people will get something like that in their heads. In Spain, it really doesn't mean anything at all, right? So I guess it's a fair, like, question, like, should you even try to use that name or not? Or are people going to understand it? But, you know,
they probably should have called it the Green Transition. I mean, that would make more sense, right?
That's funny, because that's how they call it, right? Like, what the ministry for, it's called the Ministry for Ecological Transitions. True. So they use that, which I agree, in Spain is probably the closest you have. It's still a very shitty thing, you know, but we didn't really have anything like the New Deal or... So that's, you know, that's how it goes here. But I agree. Transition is probably the closest we have, to be honest.
What do you think it was, like, more of an add-on politically for a lot of parties? Or do you, because I mean, in the Labour Party in Britain in 2019, the Green New Deal sort of fed into every single policy. And for the right, it was like just a sort of add-on, like, oh, we're going to do this, and that's like the ecological argument sorted. How did it play out in Spain in 2019, and has it changed since then as well, like the way that political parties are dealing with ecological issues?
Right, so I think nobody has managed to make it as central to their program as the Corbyn's Labour did. But of course, Corbyn didn't win. So, you know, it was like very central to a program that in the end lost. So I don't know what that means. I think here it changes, like, you know, PSOE is PSOE, so I guess, I don't know, is it central, ecology is central to their program? I wouldn't say so. You know, I think that the ministry they have is pretty okay. Like, it's probably the best part of the PSOE right now.
Okay.
But still, I don't think, you know, that you know, ecology or environmentalism or climate change is central to what the PSOE means right now by any means. So and then I think Mas País really is trying to make it central to their policies to some extent. But of course, maybe they have the same issue than another big party and they're not really about to win any elections. So what does it really mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. And Unidas Podemos, I think, is difficult because, you know, they have a very strong tradition in the, you know, I would say more traditional left. And there's always been an uneasy, you know, relationship between, you know, traditional left politics, communist politics, and environmentalism. So I would say they are trying and they are doing really well compared to many other parties elsewhere. But yeah, I don't know if I would say that it's central to their, you know, politics or
yeah.
What do you think? Is that a fair?
No, it sounds like a fair. I mean, before they had, and you'll have to excuse me if I murder the pronunciation, Equal, right? Which is like, is it kind of historically the Spanish version of the Green Party?
Kind of, I think, yeah. One of many. There's been many, like, attempts, I think, at making a big, you know, Green Party. Yeah.
And has it never really worked?
No, I wouldn't say so.
Why is it all?
That's a really interesting question. I think because of the kind of country Spain is, right? Which is a non-explanation. But so it seems to me that for green politics to work, you need a kind of, you know, developed capitalist economy with a certain kind of middle class and a certain kind of capitalist class, which we don't have. I think so. Yeah. We don't have a big Green Party because we don't have that, and that's why we also don't have like a not insane center-right party. I think so.
Right.
It's all related, I would say. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, so I take it you mean the middle class for the Green Party and the
right. I think that's how it has worked. It shouldn't be like that anymore if we're going to survive as a, you know, civilization.
Yeah.
But I think it's fair to say that this is how it has worked in the last decades in Europe, right?
No, I from the Green Party members that I've met in the UK, sorry if there's anyone listening that was a Green Party member, but they've been very middle class, Guardian reader sort of type of person, really. So yeah, right. So that's an interesting point. But they're part of, Equal is part of, I don't know anymore. You might have to tell me.
So they are with Más País now.
They're with Más País now. But they were before with Podemos, right?
Right, they left. And that's why Uralde didn't go with them and they split. So now they are like doing, you know, one too many, 1,000 green parties. And
yeah.
Let's see who survives, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like survival of the fittest with the Green Party. But it'd be interesting to see what happens with Yolanda Diaz's open front, or, you know, wide front, whatever you want to call it. And who, if they will both come on side, right?
Right. Yeah, I hope so. But yeah, who knows?
Might get a forming of a bigger Green Party. And what's your opinion on sort of extra parliamentary social movements in Spain? I mean, you were talking earlier about they use a lot of litigation, but in the recent years we've had these sort of, like, Extinction Rebellion is the first one that comes to mind, right? But then you have like Schools for Fridays. I think it's Schools for Fridays.
It's Fridays for Future.
Fridays for Future, and that's the schools, isn't it? What's your opinion on these, and how are they taken off in Spain?
Right. So I think internationally they have been very important, like, you know, Greta Thunberg was, you know, the founder or the one who started Fridays for Future, and she has obviously been extremely influential. Extinction Rebellion, I don't know if, you know, I would say they have been as influential, but they definitely have been, you know, an important actor in some places. I would say again that compared to many European countries or the US, Western countries, these movements have not been as important in Spain. I wouldn't be able to say why, but my guess is in the end, it's sort of related to the same phenomenon we were discussing before. So I guess, Spain has some, characteristics that make it more difficult for these things to become very mainstream. Still, the demonstrations here in 2019 were massive. So, it's like this resonates with people, but Fridays for Future, Extinction Rebellion are just not as big as in other countries. So, it's not like, climate change is not the big issue here. It's just that it goes to other channels, maybe, more traditional left parties or other kinds of extra parliamentary organizations. Yeah. And then for my personal opinion of them, I think, it's great that they exist and they are doing the things they do. Of course, I have some differences with them on politics and, especially Extinction Rebellion. I just don't really agree with them about how politics work and how you make changes in society. Mm. But, they can do their thing. I can do mine. If they succeed, better for them. If not, we should do something else. But, I don't see them as a problem. It's just,
Yeah. And what the think tank without money that your group that you're part of, what sort of things have you talked about and what problems have you highlighted are a problem for the climate change movement ecology movement, sorry, in Spain?
Right. That's a good question. So first, I would say the first issue we tried to address was that we saw that the mood in the environmental movement was very often pessimistic. Like, the situation is really bad and it's only going to get worse. So the best we can hope for is sort of try to survive in the ruins of capitalism, that kind of message. So we felt something else was needed and we tried to bring like a more hopeful, I don't want to say empowering, but I don't know how else to say it, but try to convince people that, if they organize with their friends and equals and co-workers and and try to really get more power in society, we can make things better, or so that kind of thing, that there's hope still. Like the science we have tells us that things are bad, but still there's time to, prevent the worst effects of climate change. So I think that was like our first main thing. And we are still trying to do that because I think still like pessimism is very common. Like, there's a kind of person, I think, who gets involved in this and learns about what, the IPCC is saying and, timelines, things like that, and just feels like, okay, there's nothing to be done. It's impossible to transition away from capitalism in 10 years, which is obviously true, but still. So, we can only hope to survive in small communities and things like that. Wow. Then we also worked a lot in trying to figure out, this is all usually very abstract, so we should try to come up with more specific policies that, people can understand immediately and they can see, if we did this, my life will improve and we will be fighting, better against climate change. So we did a lot of work around reducing the work week to 4 days, like reduce the hours people work with the same pay. So it's just, you are getting more out of your employer for fewer hours. And we felt this will, of course, be an improvement in terms of emissions if people just work less hours. It will increase employment. And if we manage to achieve this, it will just mean, a huge improvement in terms of organization at all levels in societies. It's like just a way to improve, the strength of, the working class and all sorts of, progressive organizations. And I think this has been, of course, we were not the only ones talking about this, but I think we were one of the first ones in Spain. And I think this is now becoming more mainstream. So it's defended by many parties. There's like a pilot program approved by this government the main unions in Spain, Comisiones Obreras and UGT, both support this. So, you know, it's really becoming something that at least people talk about it. And, you know, when you interview them and ask them if they would like to do it, it's like overwhelmingly positive answer. Like, you know, of course I would like to work less hours if I could do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think we have done things like that. And then we just, you know, try to translate. Like I said, a lot of things in climate change and generally in politics are written in English. So we try to translate things into Spanish.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So in our blog, there's like, you know, tons and tons of things translated. We try to translate not only the things we agree with, but when we see there's an important debate, we translate like both sides of it. So for instance, we are sort of pro-Green New Deal, like I explained before, but we also translated a few pieces like critical of it from different perspectives, because we feel like, you know, the point is to, you know, introduce these debates in Spain or Spanish speaking countries and, you know, just let people decide and if they're convinced by something else, but that's, you know, better, but for them. But, you know, we try to be a bit more like, I don't know how to say it, but
like facilitating the argument, I suppose.
Yeah. Not just, okay, this is the right thing to think, you know, just ignore everything else. This debate is happening. We feel it's important. This is our position, but, you know, let's hear what other people have to say. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I mean, the point you made about, well, I suppose, that, yeah, that's two things that you said often, like some of the major things come from English speaking countries and it takes a while for the other countries to catch up, but also the argument around climate change for years, I think, has always been you need to lose something to so we can all collectively gain something, right? Like you need to start recycling. Now, it might not, obviously you don't lose anything, but you have to make more of an effort. And I suppose like the 4-day week makes it a positive argument, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we really wanted to show people, of course, for rich countries, it might mean some changes in your life that could be seen as, you know, losing something, but there's so much we could win, you know, especially for young people who have like extremely shitty jobs, precarious jobs, have no home, you know, healthcare is getting worse, education is getting worse. So, you know, there's so much we could win and make it part of, you know, a program for to combat climate change, that is ridiculous to center everything around the things you have to sacrifice. Because for, you know, for many people, it will mean an improvement in their lives. And I'm sure of it, you know, even in rich countries. So.
And it's a structural change as well, right? So it's not going to be like, you know, hippies in a commune working 4 days a week. It's an enormous...
for everyone. Yeah. By law. And, you know, that's what everybody should do. Yeah, that's a big thing for us. I think, like, you know, we are 8 billion people almost on the planet. We either all make it or nobody's going to make it. So just stop wasting time with these solutions, you know, for your 10 friends in some, you know, which of course, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to tell anybody what to do in their lives, but I'm interested in solutions that work for everybody in the planet, you know, for small groups that can really be able to do, you know, social experiments for themselves.
Or even individuals that can afford, you know, to buy everything or bio organic or whatever. These sorts of things. Yeah. So what is your opinion on what needs to happen? What, when we're talking about the 4-day week and things, what things are being talked about at the minute? What in Europe as well, I suppose, is the big thing. What big systematic changes do need to happen?
Right. So I guess the way I try to see this is there's like long term and short term. Unfortunately, I think this is something that really made me change the way I see politics, if I'm honest. Like there's so much we need to do in the short term to have a good chance to survive as a civilization, that really sometimes it's unavoidable to compromise probably some of the things you wish you could do, but that we probably won't be able to. So in Europe, in this decade, we really need to reduce massively the greenhouse emissions. That's basically about it, and help as many other countries as we can to do the same. It means basically burning fewer fossil fuels, you know, like carbon, coal, oil, you know, gas. That's basically it. As fast as we humanly, you know, as it's humanly possible. And we are not doing that. So it's going down a bit, especially coal. Like, you know, coal is really going down, but everything else is not, and we need to go much, much faster. So that's really the main thing. And then there's other like structural changes that, you know, like the way we grow food in the whole planet really needs to change, because food is also a big part of the current emissions. Transportation is also, you know, should change. We should focus on, you know, public transit more than, you know, like we were discussing before. Like, you know, it's obviously great if you have an electric car instead of a traditional car, but if you just change all the cars for electric cars, that's really not helping much. So we need to think to invest a lot of money in public transit, and, you know, make better buses and trains and subways where there's subways and things like that. And I think really for this decade in the rich countries like in Europe, that's really what we should be focusing on. And it's really a matter of, you know, if we don't make it, things are really going to be very nasty, because, you know, the climate system has a huge inertia. So if we fail to do that, then you have locked in, you know, temperature increases for the next decades. And there's really very little you can do to avoid it. So that's why this issue is so time sensitive. Like, there's a few years to avoid that. And if you don't make it, and, you know, doesn't mean you just give up and go home. But you have ensured that, you know, you're going to see some of the worst scenarios. That's for the short term. And for the long term, in my opinion, really capitalism is not compatible to, you know, sustainable, you know, climate system for Earth. Like, you know, it's really built in as a, you know, profit maximizing constant growth system, where most of the decision power around what is produced and how it's distributed and how it's consumed is in very few hands. And as long as we don't get rid of that, we are never going to get rid of the main issue. So I think anyone who is serious about fighting climate change has to become an anti-capitalist.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the way I see it, we should try to make it so that the short-term emergency measures we are doing now should put us on the road, you know, to just abolish capitalism in general. That would be, you know, what I see as an ideal scenario. I don't know if that's possible or if it's going to happen, but that's what at least I try to do and, you know, encourage people to do.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, and, you know, it's the decisions of capitalism are in so few hands, and nation states really don't. I mean, they've got some power, right? But I think I heard this in an interview the other day with Yanis Varoufakis, and he was like, you know, who could nationalize Google? No one could nationalize Google. And this is
the US could, I guess.
Well, he would say no, but maybe it could. But I mean, they could try. Yeah, this is the point we're getting to, though, right? Is these companies are getting more and more power. And as you said, you know, capitalism is for profit and growth. And what do you think about the rights in Spain's response to climate change? Because if I remember rightly, Vox was initially sort of kind of like Trump, right? Like, climate change is a hoax, it's not real. And now they've changed their position, I understand, to sort of more, we want a Spanish New Deal, or we want our climate change for Spain, we don't want what Bill Gates and George Soros is gonna tell us to do. Is that a fair assessment or fair description?
I don't know if they have a very coherent line. I feel like they are constantly changing a bit. But
right.
I think you are right that they used to be like just hardcore denial, you know, it's not real.
Yeah.
And now they go back and forth a bit between, you
know, right,
it's not real, or it's real, but it's being used to trick you into accepting communism, right? So
right.
I think they basically do that, yeah. Which is, like you say, you know, similar to what other far-right parties, I think, are doing internationally, yeah.
And I mean, Vox and Pepe, how have they treated this climate issue in the debates around climate change and things?
So I think this links back a bit with what I was saying, that I think we just don't have a capitalist class that is, you know, comparable with the one that is in other countries. So I think ours is very backwards. So, you know, the main right-wing parties are totally dominated by, you know, interests that just don't want to have anything to do with it and just want to preserve their, you know, existing privileges and profits. So in other countries, at least there's like a, you know, sort of fight between, let's say, green capitalism and, you know,
right,
more like traditional capitalism. I think in our right-wing parties are just completely, like, you know, the PP has been historically terrible about this. They have absolutely no plans or, you know, trying to make any efforts to at least seem like they, you know, they want to do something about it or, you know, propose anything. So I think they're just like, you know, full, not denial, because that's kind of, you know, going out of, so it's not as fashionable as it used to be to just say it doesn't exist. I think just people won't believe it anymore, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think they are transitioning. So I hope no right-wing listeners, there's no right-wing listeners in this podcast, but if they were a bit smart, I think they should just, so climate change is just so easy to use to justify all sorts of terrible, you know, shitty fascist policies. Like, you know, if everything is going to be worse and there's going to be scarcity of resources worldwide and things like that, you can just justify so much, you know, violence and imperialism and, you know, making sure other people don't emit greenhouse gases because you want to do it. So, you know, if you want to do it, they cannot do it. So let's just make sure they don't do it. Things like that. So I'm a bit amazed at the right-wing parties not really, you know, figuring this out faster and saying, okay, sure, it's real and it's serious, and what we're going to do is just, you know, fuck everybody else. And,
yeah, yeah.
It's all for us and nothing for you. So I think the first ones to really clue into this, they will be the winners in the, you know, wow, right-wing climate change, you know.
Yeah, like, why is it eco-fascism?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
That's exactly. that's the phrase I've heard a lot. And I mean, it's the ship has sailed right now for Spain to become a world leader in solar energy. And is it going to catch up at any point, do you think? Or is there going to be a solar revolution in Spain? Or
I think it depends. Like, you know, if there's a pretty decent chance that in 2023, like the Pepe and Vox gain power in, you know, in Spain. So who knows what they will do? I think there's probably at this point sort of, you know, unstoppable, you know, financial interests that want to invest in this and make some profit.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's not going to go back to being as bad as it was.
Yeah.
But you definitely can make it, you know, not live up to its potential by far.
Right.
So I think it depends probably on who wins, you know, state elections and also regional elections and things like that. But yeah, probably you're right that, you know, we will never be able to just be on top. Like, you know, if we had really been serious about this since the early 2000s or something like that, who knows, you know, where we will be right now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of like one of those, it's such a shame. I think it's such a missed goal. It's very sad, really. And I don't know. Yeah, I suppose there's lots of windmills going up, but there's not a lot of wind at the minute, right?
Yeah. I mean, so I'm not an expert in how you do the energy transition, but I think the key is, you know, to install as many renewable, you know, sources of energy as you can, and just link. So inside Europe, link the different countries with, you know, like high voltage lines that go for thousands of kilometers. So, you know, if there's sun in Spain, then you can power Germany or things like that. You know, that right now this seems like science fiction, but it really is possible technically. It just needs like a massive investment. And that could mean, like, you know, that would be like a real transition away from fossil fuel energies, you know, but because people are really worried about, you know, what would you do if there's no wind one day and, you know, it's getting late, then you just get the energy from, you know, a country a few thousand kilometers away. It's just possible to do it. Just need to be friends with them and install the necessary infrastructure. So, you know, it's, like, yeah, it's even like an internationalist project, because then you need to be friends with people instead of invading them, you know, because you're using the other's energy. So, yeah.
And that's happened in Africa, right? Recently, which is one of the gas pipes has been turned off. Is that right?
Off. Yeah. So the one in Algeria goes to Morocco, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's a really good example of, you know, how fragile we are in our dependency on fossil fuels, because there's not any here. So, you know, people are just like, oh, it's the most dependable source of energy. Well, you know, where are the oil fields in Spain?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And yeah, I mean, I suppose the worrying thing is, though, is this is something that's, it's being pushed by capital, but it's also being pushed by the European Union with all the, you know, the next generation European funds. But Vox and PP might win in 2023, which obviously I hope they don't. And that will really change the economic. I mean, it's already center stage, but it could be more center stage, right? I mean, it's really gonna, that could really.
I think we could become like Poland, right? Or Hungary. So, you know, they are inside the European Union. So to some extent, they cannot avoid following some trends and, you know, directives, but they really do their best to fight against it. So I think a far right wing government in Spain could become something like that, which would be a shame, to be honest.
But are the PP and Vox that anti-EU, or do you, I don't know, it'll be strange to see how that goes, really, if they did win. I mean, I don't want to say how it goes, but
that's a good question. I think so there's a weird thing in Spain, which is everybody is pro-EU. And that's probably because of our history and how we joined and what it means for, you know, like symbolically, I don't know. But so they are, I think they don't want to be so openly against it. But when like, so you know that this whole thing, like in the Catalonian independence movement, some people were prosecuted and, you know, some of them went away from Spain. And when the European justice courts have failed in their favor, which is basically always, you can see people in the right and far right in Spain just begin to spread like anti-EU messages, like, this, they are just interfering our sovereignty, we should leave the EU, Europe sucks, you know, just let, so like, you know, sort of Brexit-like messaging. So I think they could easily become like that if, you know, if they won and there was some interest that were in contradiction with, you know, being a core member of the EU, I think they could easily just turn the switch and become anti-Europe.
Well, that's not a good note. That's not good to know. Well, I mean, what do you think, just a last question, what do you think will be the future for, apart from, well, like you said, a lot of it depends on who's elected, but what is the sort of next steps for the ecology movement in Spain?
Wow, what do I know? So I guess I just can tell you what I think, you know, what I want to be doing and what I think we should be doing. I think we need to be serious about, like I said, like short-term, effective, you know, transformations of society. So we need to be serious about taking power. That, you know, I guess that mainly these days means winning power through elections in, you know, the state, regional, city governments, but also outside elections. So, you know, just building power like in unions, you know, neighborhood associations, schools, everywhere. So you need to just be powerful to fight against the huge interests that are, you know, preventing effective action against climate change. And I think for that, you need to be serious you know, what your message is, what your, you know, policies are, what you're proposing to do, and you need to reach people. And if you're not reaching people, you need to change what you're doing, because, you know, it's really important that we reach many people very quickly to do, you know, to change society in ways we cannot even imagine within the next 10 years, which is insane just to say it out loud, but that's what we need to do, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're not achieving that, then you're not doing enough. So that's basically what I feel. But, and it's not only about Spain, it's every, you know, every, basically every country in the world needs to do something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose, you know, COP26, as it's
right. So that's a great example. Like, I'm a bit pissed when I read, like, you know, oh, they suck and it was all, you know, greenwashing and big words and no action. And it's like, of course, but, you know, it's not going to change if you don't do anything to change it. So, you know, like, if you just sit down and wait for it magically to become super, you know, effective, then you will die waiting. So it's up to you to, you know, organize and be powerful enough to change it, you know. And if it, so if we remain in the framework of, you know, United Nations conferences, then I guess that means winning power in your country.
Yeah.
And if you think that whole framework doesn't work, then you just need to figure out how to do it in another way, which is, I guess, an even bigger challenge.
Yeah.
But it's not enough just, you know, just complain and say, oh, they suck. I don't know. I don't really like that kind of, I don't know how to call it, like posturing or, you know, being, oh, I'm so much better than them. Just show it, you know, show me you can do something about it. I don't know.
No, definitely. Well, thanks very much for your time, Charles.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for having me.